It's Monday, May 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. In today's show, Malaysian authorities make a gruesome discovery in a crackdown on the human trafficking of Rohingya migrants.
Another element of this whole sordid tale has been the treatment of these people. It's really quite disgraceful behavior, basically kidnapping people and holding them for ransom.
Also in the program, we'll hear about the plight of tens of thousands of Burundians who have fled to Tanzania to escape political violence. We'll find out how Turkey's Islamist-rooted ruling party is trying to win electoral support in a secular stronghold. And we'll hear from U.S. military veterans riding their motorcycles through Washington to mark Memorial Day. That's all coming up on International Edition. Malaysian authorities say they have found more than 100 graves in abandoned camps believed to have been run by human traffickers for Rohingya Muslims. More than 3,600 Rohingyas from Myanmar and Bangladesh have arrived on the shores of Malaysia, Thailand, and Indonesia recently after fleeing their home countries by land and boat. Thousands more are believed to be adrift in the Bay of Bengal and the Andaman Sea, seeking to escape poverty and persecution. Last week, Indonesia and Malaysia agreed to temporarily allow the boat people to land with the goal of processing them for repatriation or resettlement elsewhere. Kevin Evans is an Australian analyst of Southeast Asian politics based in Jakarta. VOA's Victor Beatty spoke to him earlier and asked where Indonesia and Malaysia will house the Rohingyas.
That will be the next thing as to where they're actually being housed. And that's, I think, the start of the process launched by the National Disaster Management Agency. I think they'll be co-located somewhere close to the coastlines where they arrived and placed in temporary housing facilities. I'm not expecting them to be building great big jails for housing these people like is done in other places, but they'll be located fairly close to communities and so forth so that there's some degree of access and it's easy to get supplies to them.
How many people are we talking about?
Look, I'm guessing there's maybe a couple of thousand right now, but there's a lot of others who are still floating on the ocean somewhere out of Myanmar, Bangladesh area, down through to the south end of the Andaman Sea. So still a few thousand more to go, but I don't know what impact this might have in terms of encouraging a lot of others to take flight. That may depend a little bit on the discussions that are taking place quietly with Myanmar's authorities on dealing with some of the substantive issues which are actually leading to this exodus.
There's a very disturbing report out of Malaysia today that authorities there said they discovered a series of graves on the border with Thailand, where Rohingya Muslims fleeing Myanmar had been held. Obviously a very disturbing development.
Yes, quite horrific. And I think that adds to another element of this whole sordid tale has been the treatment of these people. It's really quite disgraceful behavior, basically kidnapping people and holding them for ransom back in these poor villages where they've come from. It's really quite almost bizarre, this sort of behavior. But to find this, particularly on Malaysian soil, I think would be quite shocking to Malaysian authorities. And I think that will be another element of the combined efforts in the region will actually be going after those people who are engaging in this disgraceful behavior.
Pope Francis on Sunday at his Pentecost message in St. Peter's Square brought this whole issue to the attention of those who were gathered there. Obviously, this has drawn quite a bit of international attention.
And so it should. And in some respects, it was perhaps a helpful message to remind the wider international community on the plight of these people. And it's probably also a helpful message for the, particularly for Indonesia, where they're willing to take in these people on a short-term basis, that it might help some of those countries that are final settlement recipient-type countries to give some attention to this area and hopefully pick up a few of these people and bring them in as refugees.
And that was VOA's Victor Beatty speaking with Kevin Evans, a Southeast Asian politics analyst in Jakarta. Well, let's take a look now at how the VOA audience has been responding to the Rohingya migrant crisis. Our social media reporter Andrew Palshevsky has more on that. Andrew, what has the reaction been like?
It's been a huge story on our social media channels, and I wanted to mention there's one video that we put up of the boat people off the coast in Southeast Asia. I know it's from about a week ago, so it was prior to all the stories that we're hearing now, but even in the past week, this story and this compelling footage viewed over 500,000 times on our Facebook page, over 4,000 likes, over 13,000 shares, many of those coming from different Rohingya advocacy groups and people wanting to spread this story. So even though the story is a bit older and before these people started coming to shore and being accepted, it's getting huge response because it's this compelling, compelling footage.
Right. And what else have you got trending on social media today?
Well, here in the U.S., it's Memorial Day. So hashtag Memorial Day 2015, hashtag Memorial Day are some topics that are trending. And I wanted to mention something that was trending yesterday into today, hashtag Rolling Thunder. Now, this is a motorcycle rally that comes through the nation's capital every year. Thousands, tens of thousands of people on motorcycles come to the nation's capital to remember their fallen brothers and sisters, soldiers that have died in battle. VOA's Catherine Gibson has a video of that, and she'll be, we'll have that video on Facebook of her story. But we had people on the backs of these bikes with smartphones filming it, putting it on social media. So
nice. It's
interesting how it's changed over the years.
That'll
since 1987 when it started.
A good perspective to have.
Absolutely.
And we're going to actually hear Catherine Gibson's report later in the show. Well, thanks, Andrew, for that. U.S. President Barack Obama has laid a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknowns as part of his observance of the annual Memorial Day holiday. Monday's ceremony was held at Arlington National Cemetery near Washington. Speaking at the event, Mr. Obama remembered the men and women who have died to secure the American people's liberty.
This may be the first Memorial Day since the end of our war in Afghanistan, but we are acutely aware as we speak, our men and women in uniform still stand watch and still serve. And still sacrifice around the world. Several years ago, we had more than 100,000 troops in Afghanistan. Today, fewer than 10,000 troops remain on a mission to train and assist Afghan forces. We'll continue to bring them home and reduce our forces further down to an embassy presence by the end of next year. But Afghanistan remains a very dangerous place. And as so many families know, our troops continue to risk their lives for us.
Well, while many U.S. communities are marking the day with parades, others are reflecting more quietly about those who have lost their lives in service to the United States. This is VOA.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artist. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition with me, Michael Lippin. International aid agency Oxfam says more than 70,000 refugees from Burundi have crossed the border into Tanzania, fearing political violence at home. As VOA's Gabe Josler reports, aid agencies are seeking more support from the world community.
Most of the new arrivals in Tanzania are women and children. They crowd the beach at Kagunga on the shore of Lake Tanganyika, which borders both Burundi and Tanzania, waiting for transport to another refugee camp. Oxfam communications officer Amy Brown, working in Tanzania, describes desperate conditions at Kagunga.
It's a very thin strip of beach that's about 800 meters long, and behind it is a high mountain. So it's very, very cut off, basically. It's rocky, sandy beach, and people are living right on the beach all the way down to the water, waiting.
Most of the refugees who have crossed the border in the past 3 weeks have been relocated to the Nyarugusu camp through another transit center. Brown says the influx is putting a strain on humanitarian agencies.
Currently now at the refugee camp, there is also overcrowding as the camp is above its capacity, and also as aid agencies struggle to get enough equipment to respond to the needs of the new arrivals.
The most urgent need, she says, is shelter. Tents to accommodate families, many of whom are now staying in churches and schools. Clean water is also needed, as well as the tanks and purification chemicals needed to store and treat it. Health is another major concern. The United Nations Refugee Agency has already reported 3,000 cases of cholera, with up to 400 new cases each day. Driving this refugee crisis is a pervasive sense of fear, as thousands flee from a volatile political conflict in Burundi. Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza's controversial bid for a third term has prompted massive street protests, deadly clashes with the police, and an unsuccessful coup attempt. During the weekend, an opposition leader was assassinated in the capital, Bujumbura, and at least three people were killed in a grenade attack. Brown says when asked why they have fled, refugees typically give one of two responses.
The first one is that people have either received direct threats to themselves or their family members, or report that family members of theirs have been killed. And then the other group of people say that they're fleeing almost preemptively. They feel like war is about to start, to use their own words, and they want to get out before that happens.
Agencies working on the ground, including Oxfam, have jointly asked for $91 million in funding to address the growing crisis in Tanzania up until September. More than 26,000 Burundians have also fled to Rwanda, and nearly 10,000 have crossed into the Democratic Republic of Congo since April. Gabe Joslow, VOA News, Nairobi.
This is VOA.
I'm Marty Johnson. Here's what's happening around the world. The Islamic State group is fortifying ranks in the Iraqi city of Ramadi as government forces plan a counteroffensive. The U.S.-led coalition scaled back airstrikes on the city overnight, focusing instead on the Islamic State stronghold of Mosul and the town of Baghdadi. Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi is telling the BBC that Ramadi will be taken back from the militants in days, not weeks. A U.N.-brokered peace conference for Yemen, scheduled for later this week, is in doubt, with Yemeni officials saying the talks are postponed. Yemen's president, Abdurrabbu Mansour Hadi, is demanding the rebels withdraw from territory seized before the talks proceed. A Tunisian soldier opened fire on his fellow troops Monday, killing seven and wounding 10 before being shot and killed himself. Authorities said the attack happened at a base in Tunis, not far from where two Islamist gunmen opened fire, killing 21 tourists in March. And Malaysia has found 139 suspected migrant graves. I'm Marty Johnson, reporting from Washington.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. Turkey's ruling AK Party is seeking a fourth successive general election victory, with the goal of securing the two-thirds of parliamentary seats that it would need in order to rewrite the constitution. To achieve that, the party, which has Islamist roots, will need to take seats from secular opposition strongholds like the western city of Izmir. That's where Dorian Jones brings us this report.
AK Party Member of Parliament Nesrin Ulama is rallying the party faithful. The party needs to score heavily in opposition strongholds like Izmir if it's to achieve its goal of securing enough seats to rewrite the constitution. Ulama is confident they have a broad appealing message.
Ülkemiz açısından dünya ile yarışır birçok dev projeyi de.
We are initiating a period with giant projects aimed at our people, but at the same time will keep us in the competition with the world. She said for this new period, we've taken the steps for two nuclear power stations, also for one of the biggest airports in the world. A decade of economic prosperity has been key to AK Party's success and broad appeal, even in opposition strongholds. But the economy is now slowing. In areas which traditionally offer strong AK support, there are grumbles about business. The AK party is also running its first election without its charismatic leader, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who is now president. Ahmet Davutoğlu is the leader facing the challenge, says Betül Durmaz, a teacher of sociology at Izmir's Gediz University.
Recep Tayyip Erdogan was a very strong leader, and right now, we saw that Davutoğlu is still doing lots of mistakes. For that reason, voters still confused about who is the leader of the AKP.
But in Izmir, the AK party, like in the rest of the country, has a formidable party machine that no other party can rival. That advantage has been key to its previous electoral success and could yet prove decisive in next month's elections, says AK Member of Parliament Ulama. This is our biggest secret behind AK Party, which resulted in its 14 years in power and success in 9 consecutive elections. Our party has about 4 million female members, and behind all of our political success lies house visits of our women branches and women members. Ulema is using this advantage to the fullest. These visits are great. We can talk about our problems face to face, this woman says. Izmir is a staunchly secular city whose voters fear the growing conservatism of the current government. As a result, the ruling party is pressing hard to make inroads in this city, using its grassroots canvassing in the living rooms of the electorate. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Izmir, Western Turkey.
This is Greenbeat.
Plastic bags blowing across lawns, floating in waterways, and getting caught on vegetation are just some of the reasons more and more local governments are adding laws against their use, including in China's Jilin province, where this shopper lives.
I totally agree with the ban order. I'm willing to pay one or two yuan for each biodegradable plastic bag.
Here in the United States, one of the latest legislative moves is California's ban on plastic bags at retail outlets. The United States' first state law banning most plastic bags may be sidelined, however, if a petition against it is successful. That should make some dog owners happy. They often use the bags to heed Mother Nature's call. And with about 83 million owned dogs in the United States, that's a lot of bags. Fortunately, some enterprising entrepreneurs have stepped in to fill the void. Companies like Chicago-based PoopBags.com make biodegradable bags for dog owners. The baggy bans are but a boon to their business. For VOA's Green Beat, I'm Rebecca Ward.
A U.S. law allowing the National Security Agency to collect data from U.S. telephone users is set to expire on June 1st. Last week, the U.S. Senate failed to pass a resolution to keep the controversial surveillance program going. VOA's Michael Bowman covers the Senate on Capitol Hill. He spoke to VOA's Jim Stevenson about what led up to the congressional stalemate.
Congress left town, but not before displaying that having the Republicans in control of both chambers is no guarantee that there will be agreement and action on something as important as how the United States handles national security in the post-9/11 era. The United States has a program where the National Security Agency collects the phone records of all Americans at all time, as was pointed out by Republican Senator Rand Paul, in a 10-hour, in 10 hours of uninterrupted speaking on the Senate floor.
Quite a display of oratory there.
Yes, and the second time he has done so in just the last 3 years. The first time was to draw attention to America's use of drones. Nevertheless, the Republican-led Senate voted on two bills and voted both of them down. The first would have taken phone records and kept them in the control of telephone companies, and the United States government could access those records via a court order. However, these records would be physically held by the telephone companies. And that's something that the Obama administration wants. That's something that the House of Representatives passed just 10 days ago, and it was thought that that was the best vehicle to resolve the issue. However, the Senate voted it down. Then the Senate voted on a two-month extension of the existing program. This was considered a stopgap just to give Congress some more time to come up with a better and more permanent solution. But at about 1 in the morning on Saturday morning, the Senate voted that down as well. So the House had already left town. The Senate voted down two bills, including the one that was passed by the House. And so as a result, Congress has left town doing nothing on the NSA's bulk collection of telephone records. That program expires at midnight on June 1st. The Senate is and the House, they are both out this week. It is the Memorial Day recess. So Congress will be returning just as this law expires, and it is not clear what, if anything, can or will be done.
There was quite a bit of disagreement between parties, within parties, on what to do with this. And you could almost say that a non-vote by the Senate was almost a no-vote. Just let it expire.
Indeed. And there is some question as to the utility of this program. It has been pointed out that of the attacks that are believed to have been prevented, it's not clear that it has specifically led to the foiling of a plot. It's also not clear if this program were to expire, say, for a day or a week or even a month, and then Congress got around to taking it up again, whether that lapse would be critical in any way regarding national security.
Well, Mike Bowman routinely covers the Senate for us, the Voice of America. Michael, thank you, and your comments are now bulk data for the masses.
Excellent. Excellent.
For many U.S. war veterans, today's Memorial Day holiday is an opportunity to look back at a divisive conflict in the nation's history. VOA's Catherine Gibson joined some of them at the Vietnam War Memorial.
Every year on Memorial Day weekend, the sound of the Vietnam War comes to Washington, D.C. Since 1987, hundreds of thousands of motorcycle riders across the U.S. have made the pilgrimage called Rolling Thunder to the Vietnam Memorial in the nation's capital. It's a place that U.S. military veteran Sharon Rinke says captures the intense emotions that surround that conflict.
Some of the people coming will be going to the Vietnam Wall for the first time. People who have friends whose names are written on that wall. Those who have served with these people whose names are on the wall.
In the 50 years since the U.S. began combat operations in Vietnam, the veterans of that war have watched public attitudes change dramatically. More than 58,000 Americans died in the war. Those who came home faced resentment and even hostility. Clay Scott, who wrote in this year's Rolling Thunder, remembers those days.
People were cussing at me, yelling at me, you Vietnam person, you baby killer, and the whole nine yards. So
Dan, how'd you feel
I immediately
that?
Took off the uniform, hit it as fast as I could, and then got on my motorcycle and rode on home.
It was a cold reception that Jerry Martin still thinks about.
I could tell that there was a very large segment of our population who had felt that what we had done was wrong.
Martin received a Silver Star and a Purple Heart for heroism for his actions during an ambush. He says the attitudes towards Vietnam veterans have changed since then.
In some ways, these cult heroes that we weren't before.
The passage of time and a new generation of veterans have helped along that change.
We've been through a couple other wars that it seems that the soldiers and are more accepted and are supported much more than they were in the Vietnam War.
Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com by clicking on the Programs tab at the top, then scrolling down and clicking on the link to the International Edition program page. I'd like to express my thanks to Director Doug Bernard and Engineer Nelson Lopes. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. Have a nice Memorial Day.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
Like many nations, the United States pauses each year to honor those who died in its defense through military service. The custom is an ancient one, recalling a speech by the Athenian statesman Pericles that the casualties of war are worthy men, and the living need not have a more heroic spirit. On Monday, May 25th, Memorial Day, in communities across America, there will be speeches striking similar themes, and a moment of silence will be observed. Like the poppies in Flanders Fields, small flags will be seen among the graves in the nation's many military cemeteries, and the families of the fallen will stop to remember. Beyond mere ceremony, the day represents a debt paid by the living to those Americans who made the ultimate sacrifice to ensure their country's freedom. Some died in battle, some of disease. Others were lost in foreign prisons and never returned. Most died very young, defending their nation's ideals and liberties, perhaps even before they had much of a chance to fully appreciate them. Hundreds of thousands died fighting to make others free too, in North Africa, Europe, the Pacific, Asia, and the Middle East. Memorial Day honors no single battle or war. Its meaning transcends heroic monuments. Rather, it is the recognition by a grateful nation that lives and blood lost in defense of its freedoms are never given in vain.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.